You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, y'all. Welcome back to Season 3, Episode 3 of Thesis on Joan. Thesis on Joan is a podcast dedicated to amplifying voices from the LGBTQ plus community in the New York performing arts scene and examining the industry from a queer perspective.
Join us as we sit down with groundbreaking theater folks, both on stage and behind the curtain.
For many queers, theater has been an escape, and this podcast looks to have open conversations on where we've come from and where we're headed as a community while queering the canon along the way. Hi, this is Holly, pronouns they, them, and I'm here to introduce our next episode. We had the incredible pleasure and honor of talking to Michael R. Jackson, and you are about to hear that interview in just a minute. And a heads up that we recorded this interview with Michael right before he was nominated for all the Tonys for Strange Loop. So congratulations, Strange Loop. They have the most Tony nominations with 11, including for Michael, including Best Musical, including for our other former guest, L. Morgan Lee. We are so excited for all of them. Congratulations. And we can say, you know, we knew him before. Michael R. Jackson is the author of the 2020 Pulitzer Prize and the New York Drama Critics Circle winning A Strange Loop. Other awards include a New Professional Theater Festival Award, a Jonathan Larson Grant, a Lincoln Center Emerging Artist Award, an ASCAP Foundation Harold Adamson Award, a Whiting Award, the Helen Merrill Award for Playwriting, an Outer Critics Circle Award, a Drama Desk Award, an Obie Award, an Antonio Award, a Fred Ebb Award, and a Wyndham Campbell Prize. He is an alum of Page 73's 173 Writers Group and the Dramatists Guild Fellowship Program, and TV includes Boots Riley's upcoming Amazon series, I'm a Virgo. Awesome. Well, welcome, Michael. We are so excited to have you with us on Thesis on Joan. Happy that you're here.
Thank you. I'm happy to speak with you.
And we always like to start with our guests sharing their names, pronouns, and anything else you would like to share about how you identify.
My name is Michael R. Jackson. I use pronouns he, him, his, and I identify as a playwright, composer, and lyricist.
Awesome. So we previously had the great and good L. Morgan Lee on the podcast to start our second season, and she was sharing...
Yay, L. Morgan!
Yeah, we love her. Yes. And she was sharing, like, what an incredible experience it was to be part of A Strange Loop, and the process felt really safe and collaborative as a performer. And what has it been like for you to collaborate with Black queer folks and trans folks on this journey of A Strange Loop? And can you tell us a little more about the early shift to cast the show with all Black and queer and trans performers?
Yeah, so... So originally, when I first started working on A Strange Loop, it had two distinct forms before it became A Strange Loop. But so the initial thing was a monologue that I wrote right after undergrad called Why I Can't Get Work, which was just a one-man, like, monologue about a young Black gay man walking around New York, wondering why life was so terrible, and sort of cycling through the various areas of his life that he was not happy with. And then once I started writing music and putting it into the monologue a couple of years later, it turned into a one-man show that I performed called Fast Food Town, which was essentially the same format, but except this time with little song moments that I wrote to punctuate the monologue. And then after that, it transitioned into the piece A Strange Loop, which was more of a quote-unquote book musical, although what used to be called a concept musical, I think. Because mm-hmm. that was my touchstone were things like Company or and A Chorus Line. And that, it was actually, we did a book reading of it without the music. That was, you had Usher, the Black gay protagonist, at the center of it, but I had... there were like white actors in it who played lots of characters. And also, you know, I think John Andrew Morrison, who's sort of like the oldest cast member of the show, he did like the mom character and things like that. And then when I wanted to do another reading of it with the music a couple of years after that, I called Stephen Brackett, who had directed some concerts of mine, including concerts that had the song Periodically in it that John Andrew sang. And Stephen, and I asked him if he would direct a reading of the whole musical just for me so I could see what I had, including the music. And he read the script because he'd only heard some of the songs and then he read the script. And he was so moved by John Andrew's portrayal of the mother that he mm-hmm. suggested to me, what if we cast the piece with all black gay men, which is what it was at that time. And so we did a reading of it, and it was still rough, you know, whatever, but it was like really exciting to see all these folks tell this sort of story. And this was like the opening number was an intermission song, but it used to have totally different lyrics. And it did not have Big Black and Queer Ass American Broadway Show in it at all. That came much later. Wow. And so then when we did, so then in 2015, was our next version of it. So that was 2012. 2012 was me and Steven. Then
10 years ago.
Right. Then 2015, and the monologue was 2003.
Wow.
Right.
So then Musical Theater Factory, Shekinah Nathak, founding artistic director of Musical Theater Factory, approached me about, she was starting the Musical Theater Factory, which is a musical theater development hub free from the pressures of commercial and critical success to develop new musicals. Nothing like it exists anywhere, really. And she said, is there anything I was working on? I was like, well, I've had this musical I've been kind of messing around with on and off over the years. Brought it into the writers group, got some feedback. Shekinah thought that I should do a residency. So we spent 2 weeks. I cast it with everyone. That was when I met Elle Morgan.
Amazing.
And though I met her pre-transition. And we did the show as cast at that time. And then I got a bunch of little bites after that. To do little pieces of it or whatever and some other stuff at Musical Theater Factory. And then we did a big splashy concert in 2016 at Fine Science 54 Below. And that sort of really got, I think the industry was kind of like, began to be like, oh, what is this musical? And then Players Horizons sponsored a reading of it in November of 2016, 4 days after Trump was elected.
Wow. Oh my God.
And then, but that actually weirdly, I think, helped us in a strange way because my producer, Barbara, was like very rattled by the election and also like excited by the piece and afraid of it. And she felt like there was something she could maybe do to help it along. And at first she, you know, and also Michael Walkup from Hate 73 felt similarly, but he was, Hate 73 is an organization that helps playwrights get their first off-Broadway productions. And Barbara is a commercial theater producer. And so they together started going around seeing, them and my then agent were trying to see if anybody would do the show. And no one would do it. And so Barbara, as she famously said, she said, I got mad. And so she decided to option it. And then that helped us, you know, get... We did another reading of it like 9 months after that initial playwrights one. And that's when Players Horizons decided to do it. And then there was another year to the production from that point. Wow. And in that year, like we were doing more developing, tweaking, fixing. I think we did another workshop, like a movement workshop, that all the stuff. And then the Playwrights Horizons sent us to like a little retreat so that me, Steven, Brackett, Raja, Feather Kelly, my choreographer, and also my then orchestrator, Darius Smith, before he passed away. We were doing some work on the show, and I had been tinkering with the opening number. I was just like, something is not right. Because also, the thing... I'm sorry, this is a long story, but it's a long way of answering your original question.
It's a lot longer for you to live it than to tell us this.
Right. was that, so we, so the thing I forgot that I left out was that when, like, white actors were in the piece, I had not defined the thoughts at all. Like, they were, I called them, like, changelings, and I had all these weird little names for them because I didn't know what they were. And so, somewhere toward, closer to the playwright's production, or to the playwright's first reading, the Trump one, they became the thoughts. And then, when we did the little retreat, I was like, something's not, like, right. Like, the opening number was totally fine as it was, but I was like, something's, like, not totally telling us what this event is. And suddenly it, like, dawned on me that, like, they were, he was writing, he was, like, trying to figure out whether he, how he could write the musical within the musical. And that's when it turned into Big Black and Queer Ass American Broadway Show. I rewrote the whole opening number lyrically from top to bottom. And the only thing that stayed was how many minutes to the end of intermission.
Oh my gosh.
But like, but so to answer your original question about what does it feel like to work with like queer folks, gay, trans, et cetera, non-binary, et cetera, it feels incredible because it feels like A, like, what a great, what an important and incredible population of people to put in a musical. But also, the rewriting that opening number with those folks in mind sort of manifested the idea that it would go to Broadway before it ever went to Broadway, before it even went to off-Broadway. Even though that wasn't what I was trying to do, but that's what artistically... me and the character Usher was like thinking in our minds, like that's what he was writing. Like he was like, he had a dream that maybe this would be like all the big musicals that he loved or, you know what I mean? As a musical theater writer. Mm-hmm. And so it was so cool to me that like that is a, in that big splashy, you know, vision of a dream is black and queer folks.
And you didn't mean to manifest it, but you did.
Right. And that's so. That's what's so, it's so thrilling to me about, you know, when I go to the show and watch them sing that opening number every night, is that like, wow, like they made that happen in a weird way.
Oh, amazing. And you mentioned Raja Feather Kelly. We're huge fans
of Raja Feather Kelly's work. The greatest.
Can you share more about how working with Raja helped bring, like, the queerness of the show to life?
Yeah, because Raja is such a, like, Raja's not just, like, your standard choreographer. Raja is, like, an observer of human behavior. And he always says that he takes human behavior and he turns up the volume and turns up the heat and puts it to account. So, like, he's just, he takes what's already sort of naturally in people, and he like figures out how to turn it into something bigger than what it is. And that's so cool. It's not just like doing everything on like a kick, you know, or a three or whatever, you know, choreographers do. It's truly like it's almost like he's making little movies out of people, like out of every person, you know, their own little movie that they're in that you could track. You could track each of the thoughts there throughout the whole, from beginning to end, because Raja has like observed what's special about the person embodying that character and that set of characters, and he like figures out how to thread them through. He's really quite a genius.
So cool. Yeah. I mean, that's a good reason to go back at least six more times. So thank you.
Yes.
That's what I was just going to say.
Like, focus on like another thought and like their track and where they start and where they end up and what they do and all that.
Oh, amazing. And so in A Strange Loop, your musical is demanding this shift to a big black queer ass American Broadway. And then what creatives do you dream of bringing to Broadway with you to like make this, to also manifest this dream?
Troy Anthony is someone whose music I quite like. And he is kind of like a fierce black gay man who I think that people would enjoy hearing his work on the Broadway stage. C.A. Johnson is a playwright whose plays I quite like. And I would love to see some of her work on the stage. My friend Keeley Gibson is someone whose work I really admire, and I think that his work should be seen. It's so many people, like everyone. I want to bring them all. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And CA was a guest in our first season, so definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
But we can link to all those folks, too, so our listeners can find out more about their work.
Yes.
And in your musical, In a Strange Loop, it's about kind of an outsider looking into the industry. And now that your show is up to be potentially nominated for the Tonys and other awards, the gatekeepers are now required to see your show. Mm-hmm. So what do you hope that they are taking away from this?
But also, I'm one of the gatekeepers, weirdly.
Ooh, say more.
Because I'm a Tony voter.
Right.
I'm also a Tony voter, so I'm weirdly also a gatekeeper.
How does that feel?
Yeah.
Stressful.
It's a lot to do, too.
It is a lot to do. I think when I first got that privilege, I was much more excited about it than I am now. Because now it just means you have to go and watch everything and have an opinion and cast the vote. And it's very political and also time consuming.
Yeah.
But sorry, but that's not really what you were asking. I mean, now the gatekeepers outside of me have to, although I guess I'm not a gatekeeper. I'm not a Tony nominator. I'm just a voter. So the nominators are the ones who like say whether it's will get nominated for a Tony.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just vote once with whatever they decide.
Yeah.
So I'm like a mini gatekeeper.
Gatekeeper Junior.
You're the second gate.
I'm the second guard.
But what are you hoping those folks are taking away as they're considering nominations?
To be honest, like the thing I've been telling people when I'm asked about just in general what I want audiences to take away from the show or what I hope that they're thinking about, I hope they're thinking about themselves. The show is about being a person. And so I hope that through Usher, people think about them, like what it means to be a person and what it means for other people to be someone else to be a person. Mm-hmm. And all the sort of complexities and the nuances and the specificities of that. So I hope that like the Tony people, that they see the value in that, that's moving to them in some way or that it's worth recognizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And you've described Strange Loop as emotionally biographical. Can you speak mm-hmm. to the tradition of queer creatives drawing from emotional experience, and does that inform your other writing?
I mean, I don't have like an academic answer to that. I can only speculate that because you don't hear, I mean, now you do, but like historically you have not heard as many stories from Black queer people sort of affirming that identity in their work, that like, and as a result of that, it means that those stories are not necessarily out there, that many of us just in a desire to be both to be represented, but also I would say to be not misrepresented, to that we like have to tell the stories of our lives, so there's some sort of record of what we lived through and what our thoughts were and what our points of contention were and where we came from and all of that. So that's certainly something I wanted to do. I felt unseen, unheard. I felt misunderstood. And so I began writing what would become A Strange Loop in an attempt to try to become duly noted for an experience that I knew was not insignificant in some way, even if I felt insignificant. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important. That's certainly how I come through it. And there was a second part to that question.
How does it inform your other writing?
I mean, I think that I've always been a pretty personal writer, no matter what I'm doing. And so there's always going to be a little bit of me in anything that I do. It's not necessarily going to be, I mean, A Strange Loop is, like, so specifically about, quote-unquote, me. Like, not just me, Michael R. Jackson, but, like, the concept of me or I. Mm-hmm. So it's not like everything else I do is that. But, like, my next piece, for example, I think, if I were a dramaturg, I would say, oh, A Strange Loop is about me or I. And White Girl in Danger is about we. It's about being a part of a racial group or class. A class within a racial group. Mm-hmm. Or that's part of what it's about. And so there's a personal connection to that. But it's a different sort of angle than what A Strange Loop is about. And then I have, like, another musical I'm working on called Teeth with my collaborator, Anna K. Jacobs. And that's, like, about, you know, a lot of female issues, of which I'm not female. So that's part of the reason why I was collaborating with Anna on it. But there's a thing inside of it that's about sort of, like, religious sexual repression. And that's very much a part of my story. And that's what I connected to when we decided to adapt the film into the stage version. So there's always going to be a little bit of the personal, and to some degree or another, in whatever I do. It depends, but the angle is going to change.
We didn't have a question about it, but in the future, I definitely want to talk more about Teeth, mm-hmm. because there needs to be more horror musicals. Yeah, that's take.
Agreed.
This is the one where, like, there's teeth in a vagina, right? Yes. Okay.
Correct. Vagina dentata.
Yes. Amazing.
I mean, I cannot wait for that. So I'm thrilled to hear that y'all are still working on it. That's mm-hmm. great.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at supsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So also, going back to A Strange Loop, you mentioned in a recent interview that, quote, church is the first place that you learned theater. Mm-hmm. So how did you queer the form of gospel for A Strange Loop, for those scenes that are gospel-driven?
Well, you know, in A Strange Loop, part of the project of A Strange Loop is trying to, for an audience, create the experience of what it is to be Usher, like what it feels like. And part of what it feels like to be Usher is to be in a religious environment and both, like, be, you know, thrilled by, like, the musicality of it and the sort of passion inside of that, but also to be persecuted for his sexuality. And that for both of those things to be in concert. And so I guess you could say I queered the sort of religiosity by creating an event wherein the audience is invited to clap along to a really negative message about AIDS. And in so doing that, they're given a choice. They don't have to do it, but some do, and they start doing it and they stop. Some don't start at all. They're all looking to their neighbors for a cue as to what's allowed. Some are getting angry at the choices others have made. Some don't care. Some are, you know, everybody has a different point of entry into that particular moment when they're clapping along to the song AIDS is God's Punishment. And that, for me, is the queer experience of what it's like to be in particularly, or specifically for me, a Baptist church, but in any sort of evangelical or Pentecostal church where there's like beautiful music and sort of hateful ideology operating at the same time. And that seems pretty queer to me.
Yeah. I was saying, we talked about this for like maybe 45 minutes yesterday, this clapping moment right. specifically.
And I always like to be very clear about that. I have no judgment whatsoever about what anyone in the audience chooses to do. I believe in the theater that everybody is allowed to have their own authentic response, including walking out. And so for me, I like that the show invites people to respond what however feels right to them. That's really for me a very powerful moment, and it is a strange loop. It is what that it feels like if you were like a queer person in a church where there's like hateful ideology, and it's I will say this till the day I die, I do not judge anybody's response to that song at all.
And then we'll move on from the clapping part. For the clapping, was that something that you wrote into the script, or was that something that came from like director?
That is definitely, I did write that into the script. I don't think I knew whether the audience would do it or not, but I did write it into the script.
Yeah. And it feels like you're like breaking the rules of what happens in church and thinking about rules. Were there any that you had to like give yourself permission to break with the show while you were working on it, and then also when it was almost closer to finished?
I don't know that I had to give myself permission to break rules, because in a weird way I was trying to like follow them. The whole time I was working, I was like, what does Usher want? He has to want something. There's got to be an I want song somewhere. Like, I definitely followed that. Like, that's real. And I was like, there has to be rising stakes. There has to be, like, I wanted to create something that had dramatic integrity that wasn't, because that's why I didn't do the, like, Fast Food Town version, where I was, I was doing it, because I was like, oh, that's just like a cabaret act or like a one-man show. And I have respect for those things, but that isn't what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to feel like it was an actual musical, whatever that, I mean, I knew it was going to be not a conventional musical, but like, I wanted to feel like you wondered what was going to happen. And so as far as breaking the rules, I guess like breaking the rules in terms of content, language, I've always, you know, I've been writing, not necessarily, theater, but I've been writing words since, you know, I was like 11 years old. Like fiction, poetry, whatever. And I've always been a bit of a saucy writer. So that's always come with me. But like, I guess trying to push the boundaries of form for sure. Like I knew, but I also knew, but I was also in conversation with other musicals that I love. So it's a little bit yin and yang, I suppose, with that of trying to sort of push the boundaries of the form, but also to celebrate it. It's a big black and queer ass American Broadway show. It's not a big black and queer ass American anti-Broadway show. It's like Broadway. Razzle dazzle. I love that stuff.
And then also we've been following on Instagram, we've been following on Twitter. We've seen a lot of notable fellow Broadway folks coming to see the show, and some stars. So is there anyone in particular that you are excited to have come see the show? And we have to ask, has Liz Phair seen it? Is there plans for that?
So wait, do you mean, are there people who I'm excited who have come to see it, or people who I want to come see it?
If you want to shout out some folks who have already seen it, that would be great. And then any people that you hope will come.
And you mean like Broadway people specifically, or?
Could be Broadway, could be more mainstream celebrities, whatever.
Who are some Broadway people who have come and seen the show? Alan Cumming, one of our co-producers, came and saw it. Patty Murin, who the cast has this weird, funny little fake beef with. she came and saw it. That was something that began like with them. Like, I only heard about it after the fact, and I was like, that's so weird. But anyway, she came and saw it.
We're going to look into that.
You'll find it. It's all love. It's totally all love. It's just, it's a funny, weird thing that when I heard about it, I was like, okay. Who else was some, Tally Sessions came last night, I think, or two nights ago.
So Andre DeShields was there.
Oh, that's right. Andre DeShields came to opening. Oh, right. Opening night. Andre DeShields was there. Lilias White was there. Mm-hmm. LaShawn's was there. So it was really great to have those. Like, they're like kind of the grand dames and elder statesmen of theater. And so I was happy to have them in the mix. Queen Latifah was there.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Candy Burris from Real Housewives of Atlanta was there. Stacey Abrams was there, although I didn't see her, but she was there.
Oh my gosh. I just started reading a new book about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the first section is an interview with Stacey Abrams about Buffy, and I lost my mind.
Oh yeah, apparently she's like a big, like, not just Buffy, but she also wrote like these like romance novels.
Oh, she said she's apparently a big Star Trek fan too.
Yeah, she was on Star Trek recently. Like, whatever, one of the Star Treks that's on, oh, I don't know on what channel, like Picard or whatever, or but she was on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a fair amount of people have come. Liz Phair has not seen the show, but she is very aware of it. I met her in 2019, during the Playwrights run, and I had a beautiful conversation with her backstage at one of her concerts, and it was really, really awesome. She's a really, really wonderful person.
That's great to hear. So Strange Loop is partnered with GLAAD and the Hedrick Martin Institute to increase access to the show for queer youth. And what does it mean to you to have these folks coming to the show, and what has their response been?
It's been really wonderful to have, like, young queer folks coming to the show, some of whom are, like, you know, theater students and some who aren't. And they just, to hear them express like that, what the show means to them. I remember being like a younger person and like not, and like the first time I saw something that really meant something to me, it's like, and it's great. Like, to have something that like you get excited about that like kind of makes your heart race a little bit. And so if I was able to make something that was that for somebody else, that like I could die happy that like, that they have something that they can feel good about. There's so few things in the world sometimes that you can feel good about, that like a piece of art can and music can be that for like a young person, then thank God.
Yeah. Is there anything that you wish that the next generation of musical theater creators could have that maybe you didn't? What would that be?
Well, it's weirdly something that I had but didn't realize that I had, which was fearlessness and a sense of risk taking. I do worry about some of the young artists today, just because of the state of the world. The culture is so much is about sort of what is that thing that they do for babies where they put the locks on everything?
Baby-proofing.
Uh-huh. I feel like there's a lot of baby-proofing for young artists, and I feel that that is a mistake, and that we should not baby-proof so much. I understand that everybody has their own feelings about quote-unquote safety, but I do think that art needs to be about exploration and freedom, and I sometimes feel like young artists are not being given the tools to be free in their art. And so that's something that I really strongly, strongly would like to offer with like all kinds of compassion to artists, is that to be fearless and to take risks and to be free.
Great advice. Thank you. And we're moving to a part of our show we call Queering the Canon. It's when we think about a play or a musical from theater history that we would like to change and make queer. Mm-hmm. So is there a work that you would personally like to either see queered or write the queer adaptation yourself?
I think that I would like to see the queer version of... Of what? Like, maybe... I mean, I feel like so many things I like already are queer. So what would I want?
That's great.
So I think maybe I would queer something like... Oh, I'd queer like an August Wilson play. Mm. Like, I'd queer like Fences.
Ooh, how would you queer Fences? I want to hear more.
I don't know. Maybe like Troy and the Sun would like fuck or something. I don't know. I'm not saying that because I thought deeply. Yeah. I'm not saying that because I thought deeply about this. But I used to always... So like when I was a young playwright, like in undergrad, I would write the same things like over and over again. And I was constantly writing, and I kind of, it weirdly did it in a strange loop. I was constantly writing about fathers and sons, like, who would have sex or would accidentally have sex or like wanted to have sex or there was sexual tension or whatever. Like, and so like, there could be something to like doing that in Fences. I don't know how. I have not thought this through on any level, but I think, especially just because August Wilson is such a, like, straight man in his work, you know? And the men are, like, straight men. That, like, it would be cool to queer that somehow. I don't know how I would do it.
Yeah. The tension's there, though. I don't think it would be hard for you to add
No, like, the speech that the son gives to Infences where he's like, Dad, you don't like me. Mm.
Yeah.
I want you to like me, you know? Like there's
And he's like, why do I have to like you?
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something there.
It's a great gem.
I don't think his estate would like stand for that, but you just asked me the question and I answered it.
No, that's what it's here for.
Right.
Yeah. I'd love a queer rose too.
Oh yeah.
Fences.
Sure.
Yeah. Make them all gay.
So our next section is the queer culture rec. So outside of theater, what's your queer culture indulgence? It could be like TV, books, an event.
So this is not going to be a satisfactory answer, but because I'm not watching any queer or any outwardly queer culture stuff right now, but I am watching Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, that's queer.
Quite a lot. So, all right. So, queer. If that's queer, like, I love it. I never watched it as a kid. My mom watched it, but I started watching it at some point during the lockdown or whatever. And it is, I basically, as much as I can, I watch an episode every night before bed. And it is so good. It's so good. And it is weirdly queer too, because there's all these, one of the things that's so amazing about it is that there's these, like, incredible guest stars of either golden age sort of people who in, like, 1985, 86, whatever, they were either, like, golden age people from, like, a long time ago who were, like, doing, she wasn't one of the people, but, like, somebody like Lillian Gish as, like, an old woman on Murder, She Wrote would be on there. Again, I don't think he wasn't one of the guests, but someone like that. But then also, it will be people who now are very old, were much younger, on there. So it would be like, you'd see like Kate Mulgrew.
Oh, wow.
Or like Donna Pascal, or like just some random, like some person you're like, oh my God, that's a young Anne Neera. Like I just watched an episode with Anne Neera, and it's like, and you watch that, plus Angela Lansbury is like in the middle of it, and it's the pleasures of it are just boundless and endless.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but I should revisit. That's awesome.
I think everyone should watch it. It's so good.
Is it very like Scooby-Doo, like you, it kind of hits the same beats every time? Or
every episode is exactly the same. I mean, in terms of like, there's a murder. Jessica just happens to be in town, or it's in Cabot Cove, and there's a murder. We think it's one person, we think it's another person, but really, it's this other person.
Right.
And Jessica figures it out. But that's one of the many pleasures of it. It's not draining your energy the way these binge watches do, because it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then the next episode is as if the episode before it did not happen. I absolutely love it.
Mm-hmm. We love a tie-up. That's great.
Yeah.
And then one of our last sections for Queer Gives. So we like to ask folks if there's a charitable organization, a mutual aid fund, or another group that you'd like to shout out for us to uplift and support.
I'm always trying to encourage people to give money to the Musical Theater Factory, just because I owe so much to them for giving me, like, my initial little hub to work on A Strange Loop. And there's not a lot of organizations that support the development of new musicals, and so any time I can do that, I would encourage people to give resources to the Musical Theater Factory.
Awesome. And how can folks follow you, follow for updates on what you're doing next?
You can follow me at on Twitter at The Living MJ, as in Michael Jackson, The Living MJ, on Instagram at The Living Michael Jackson. My website is www.thelivingmichaeljackson.com. I'm pretty contactable.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you again.
Thank you, of course. I was happy to speak with you.
Thanks for listening. If you like, please follow, rate, and review us, and share us with your friends.
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at ThesisOnJoan.
We love to hear your queer culture recs and ideas for queering the canon. Send us an email at thesisonjoan@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 845-445-9251.
Come back for more interviews, fun queer content, recommendations, and discussions on current theater.
Until next time, keep it queer.
Not that it'd be that hard for y'all to do.
Can I ask, did you, and forgive me if you've said this before, but did you actually work at The Lion King?
I did. I ushered there for 4 years.
Oh, wow. I sold merch there for a summer.
Oh, wow.
That was in 2008?
That was probably right when I got fired.
Oh, wow.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.